Welcome to the ARUG Zen Center podcast. Our talks and discussions are offered for free to anyone who is interested in the ancient wisdom tradition of Zen. If you find these recordings to be of benefit, please consider donating to ARUG through our website, www.zenwave.org. Thank you for listening and for your kind support.
This is case 86 from the Heikigan Loku. Yunmen's kitchen pantry and the main gate. Pointer. He holds the world fast without the slightest leak. He cuts off the myriad flows without keeping a drop. Open your mouth and you're wrong. Hesitate in thought and you miss. But tell me, what is the barrier penetrating eye? To test, I sight this to see. The case. Yunmen imparted some words, saying, "Everyone has a light. When you look at it, you don't see it, and it's dark and dim. What is everybody's light?" He himself answered on their behalf. The kitchen pantry and the main gate. He also said, "A good thing isn't as good as nothing." The verse. Spontaneously shining, ranged in the solitary light. He opens a route for you. Flowers fall, the tree has no shadow. When looking, who doesn't see? Seeing or not seeing, riding backwards on an ox, entering the Buddha shrine. So in our discussion last Sunday, we explored the importance of examining our state of mind or general state of being before we speak and act, so we can learn to identify harmful energies or tendencies. In the text we studied, Shantideva is encouraging us to remain still and silent when we experience state of mind such as impatience, pride, fear, abusiveness, irritability, biased in our own favor, looking for an audience, averse to the well-being of others. When we feel this way, the advice is to refrain from letting these energies take over our speech and actions so they don't cause harm. It's a simple and logical advice, but it takes time and concentrated effort to develop the spiritual maturity to actually put this into practice. Or in other words, we can wholeheartedly agree that this is a good idea or good advice, yet still find it very challenging to apply in our everyday interactions. And there's more than one layer to working with this challenge. First, when we look at it, first we need to continuously develop an intimate awareness of our state of mind by keeping the finger on the pulse and being fully honest about the kind of thoughts and feelings we experience at any given moment. You have to be aware. We may not want to admit that we are emotionally entangled. We may not own up to a particular kind of inner energy, such as aggression, pride, self-loathing, or impatience. Or we may be so used to suppressing it all and hide behind a fake smile, or a train, or an idea of a self-image that we have created, then defend. So the first aspect of Shantideva's advice has to do with getting to know ourselves. Getting to intimately know ourselves. What are our triggers? Right? So, and then what is it that makes me that triggers this kind of emotion or that kind of thought in me, right? So the first impulse is to point at something or someone, right? Before this happened, I was fine. After this happened or that was said to me, then I was not fine. That's the first impulse. But that's very shallow. That's very superficial. That's very trigger-based or trigger-level. What this is talking about is actually seeing beyond that. So allowing that immediate reactivity or immediate explanation to arise and then subside. And then examine what's going on here. What's really going on here. Not what my mind is saying. So first we have to get to know ourselves. And second, the second aspect is knowing how to stay still and silent. Knowing how to stay still and silent. We may be staying silent by stew on those powerful thoughts and emotions and magnify them. Or stay silent and develop passive-aggressive attitudes, which can potentially cause even more harm down the road. So it's not enough to just keep our mouth shut and not move. The same way that it's not enough to sit down and claim I'm practicing Zazen. Yeah, you may be sitting down. You may be sitting down and not moving for the duration of the period. But what are you doing? Are you actually doing non-doing while you're sitting down is the question. Because we could be sitting Zazen and make things worse. And I've said it before, we all have heard this before. Right? So by sitting down and then stewing and thinking and coming up with all kinds of ideas about other people, about ourselves. Right? So how do we practice? The how is always most important. So there is the need to work with the mind, always. To work with the mind and quell, knowing how to quell the harmful energies through quiet observation and through directing our attention to a deeper experience of being. Now, we don't even know what that means often at the beginning, right? What does it mean, a different or deeper experience of being, right? Different than what we're experiencing right now. What does it mean to go deep? People ask that, right? And we don't have to know much about the depth as much as what it is that we are releasing our grip from, right? Because if I'm not engaged in the shallows or with the shallows, I'm naturally, my attention will naturally shift into the deeper. So I don't have to know much about explanation of the word deep, right? The practice has nothing to do with explaining. It has everything to do with admitting and examining our state of mind and learning how to not follow. When we don't follow, we naturally sink. We actually sink deeper and deeper and deeper, which often happens in Zazen when we're actually practicing doing nothing. When we practice not following thoughts, the attention goes deep. Deep to a point of losing the outline of me. Losing my idea of who I am. And then feeling merged with the surroundings. That's moving in that direction. That's moving towards the deep. So knowing how to be still and silent goes directly to the heart of our practice. Right? Goes directly to Zazen. And to the theme of our anga, to humility. It's that release. The letting go. Every time I react or I am reactive, I am fortifying the self. I'm moving away from humility. There is no humility as long as I'm around. As long as I'm around to complain, to retaliate, to push away, to reject. I know nothing about humility. I may like the idea. I may try to practice humility, maybe trying to practice humility. But it's all games. So first we need to examine, am I actually releasing? Am I letting go? Although it feels, I feel hurt. Can I let go of that? And this is very important because feeling hurt often reflects that. It comes from that. It comes from me defending me. So someone walks in and steps on that. Steps on my idea of me. It hurts. We don't know that this is a phantom pain. It feels like something is there and someone is hurting it. So we have to learn how to feel that hurt first, and then let it naturally subside, and then see what is really going on here. And what, this is not talking about abusive behavior. This is about our inventions. So in Zazen, one of the most common issues we all experience at different times and to varying degrees, is the sense of underlying restlessness or discontentment. It is what leads us to seek spiritual practice, and it is what we encounter when we sit down quietly and turn the attention inwardly. So there's no way around having to meet this energy and then learning how to work with it. People often say, I feel too restless to meditate. So I either get up in the middle of a sit, a period, or I skip it altogether. It's very common. Now, it's natural to experience such feelings, so we don't want to suppress it or pretend it's not so. But if we don't know how to work with our own restlessness, it will intensify and will take over our decision-making process. So not sitting when we feel restless, not just doesn't make the restless go away, it actually fuels it. Because we're not working on quelling it. When we don't quell it, we feed it. The act of getting up and moving is the restlessness acting out, basically. And it's the restlessness that's saying, the restlessness itself is saying, I have too much going on and therefore I don't have time to meditate. Or I need to get up in the middle of Zazen because I just remembered something I need to take care of right now. I just remembered it. And it has to happen right now. So when we first sit down and practice, it's not uncommon to experience this buzz, this restlessness, right? So we have to learn how to first accept that. First accept that and then work with it. There are many ways to work with it. Go to the body, go to the breath. Ground yourself. Remind yourself where you are physically. And then, if we stay, it will naturally subside. But we have to give it the time. It's kind of like taking a nap in the middle of the day. It can be very nurturing. But when we first put the head on the pillow, the mind is racing. There's a lot going on. We just step away from the day. So the mind is racing, but if you breathe and you calm yourself down, you actually do get into a deep state of restfulness and getting up feeling better. What I'm trying to say is there's no way to avoid the buzz, whether it's at the beginning of Zazen or in the middle of the day. When we don't acknowledge these powerful energies and regulate them, they take over and become the master, making our mind and body the servants. And that's what we need to recognize. It's not, I will sit or I will not sit. That has nothing to do with that question. It has to do with, will I allow this to be the master, or will I work on changing that? And this is what Shantideva was talking about when he said, when I encounter such energies, I will remain still like a piece of wood. And the practice of remaining still is a proven method to intercept the habitual automatic pattern of thoughts and emotions leading to speech and action. And because this pattern is so deeply ingrained in us, we trust it. And because we trust it, as the Buddha said, it takes time and effort and discipline to shift out of this familiar groove. It's a deep groove. It takes time to get in touch with the depth of our being, experience the great light it emits, and then learn to put our trust in that rather than in the familiar pattern. It takes time, but again, even with that, it's not just time. It's time and continuous, concentrated effort. It's not just I've been practicing 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. I've done so many koans and zazen kais and sishins and angos. It's not going to lead to anything unless we actually put in specific kind of effort. So from the advice of staying still, Shantideva said, going on from that, he said, examine thus yourself from every side. Look at yourself. Note harmful thoughts and every futile striving. Note harmful thoughts and every futile striving. Thus it is that heroes in the bodhisattva path apply their remedies to keep a steady mind. So this is the recipe. Then he talks about taming the mind by recognizing the strong pull towards distractions and displacement activities. AKA the phone. Right? The great one, the great displacement activity. It offers endless mind-numbing gazing. And they said, if you find you grubbing in the soil or pulling up the grass or tracing idle patterns on the ground, remembering the teachings of the Blissful One, restrain yourself at once. Now the commentary, this is from Pema Chodron's commentary on this. She said, tracing idle patterns on the ground refers to doodling. She said, one time during a meeting, I was making little drawings and squiggles on the side of my notebook. Trungpa Rinpoche was her teacher. So what I was doing and asked, did you know that monks and nuns aren't supposed to doodle? And she said, this in fact was the first time I've heard of it. Nevertheless, she says, it became obvious to me why we doodle. We aren't very interested in being present. We aren't very interested in being present. You can adjust if you need. She says after that, this is basic mindfulness training. It may seem a bit extreme to be afraid of doodling or pulling up the grass, but life is short. Instead of strengthening the habits of a wandering mind, let's train in staying present. In Tibetan, the word for meaningless distraction is dunzi. We can waste a whole life with dunzi. This is Shantideva's point here. Hence the Eno's reminder at the end of Zazen, take heed, do not squander your life. Right, so we hear that. We say, well, I'm not squandering. Most of the time, I'm not squandering my life, so I'm good to go. And somebody's laughing. Right, and we actually believe that. We believe that what we're doing makes perfect sense and is needed in some way. But we do have to study, you know, we're all studying ourselves. We do have to study ourselves throughout the day, moment by moment. What's going on here? What's the point of this activity? Is it needed? So we do look for idle activities to distract ourselves from facing the present moment, because being fully present means facing our restlessness and discomfort, facing our fears, or facing life as it really is, as opposed to the way our preferences demand it should be. Also facing impermanence, right? The mother load. If only we can face that today, our lives will change radically. And the Buddha said it's one of the most difficult things to understand, impermanence, that is. And he said it's one of the most difficult things to understand because everybody understands it. Who doesn't know that they are of an impermanent nature? But it's that knowledge remains in the head. It doesn't go into the body. It doesn't go into our emotional understanding. So we get it, but we don't. So we have to turn towards everything. And sometimes we simply don't like the way our lives turned out to be. Sometimes it may just be that. We may not want to admit it, but we don't like where we ended up. It could be about relationships, career choices we have made, or any current consequences of our past decisions. So being present means sitting in the rawness of the experience instead of looking for escape routes. It's the only practical way to actually see what we have become attached to and what we have become identified with. So then we can begin to see the fragments that form our fabricated sense of self. Right, by examining and seeing those pieces, bits and pieces, we begin to see what creates, or we begin to see the glue that puts it all together. So we then call it me. So by staying present to all of it, we expose the falsehood, and by exposing the falsehood, we get in touch with the truth of our existence. That's the process of going deep, which is what Yunmen is trying to point at in this koan. In this case, he said to his disciples, everyone has a light. When you look at it, You don't see it, and it's dark and dim. He then asked, what is everybody's light? Now the word has can be somewhat misleading, since it can sound as if this light is a possession that we can get or lose, or can be gotten or lost. The light Yunmen is referring to is intrinsic in each of us, or to each of us, each person, and each and everything, not just us, animate and inanimate alike. So that's not in question. The question is, how do we see this light? And how does it function in our everyday life? How do we see what we are? The issue with not seeing the light has to do with the way we are trying to see it. Or with the fact that we're actually trying to see it. So there is a collection of commentaries on the Blue Cliff Record written by two famous Japanese Zen masters from 17th century, Hakuin, who was from the Rinzai lineage, and Tenkei, who was from our Soto lineage. And I'd like to share their comments on this koan so we can have an appreciation for the different styles and then clarify Yunmen's meaning. Hakuin said, this koan is a crucial pass within the Blue Cliff Record. No explanation is needed. Everyone has a light. I don't accept any of the interpretations at all. Do not understand it as inherent in everyone. When you look, you don't see. As soon as you try to see, you cannot. What is your light? Your eyebrows lie horizontally over your eyes. A pitch black mountain range runs through the night. That's everyone's light. And Tenkei said, the light that everyone has is not something like the luminous curl of a white hair between Buddha's eyebrows in scriptural imagery. Simply, not eating with your nose is everybody's light. Simply not eating with your nose. Yunmen's statement seems grandiose, but from the perspective of one who knows, it's quite funny. It's quite funny to actually have to say it. Quite pointless. So one says that the light is just your eyebrows lying horizontally over your eyes. And the other one says simply not eating with your nose is everyone's light. It's so simple and available, yet so unapproachable for most. It's available because we're never a part of it. And it's unapproachable because of the ways we try to approach it. Or we can say that it's unknowable because of the way we try to know it. And Yunmen says that when we try to see our inner light, it is dark and dim. When we take on the task of understanding our true nature, we tend to do it in the same way we try to figure out everything else. We turn towards a process of logical reasoning, and then we examine it from a fixed position of subject and object, or positions. So I am the one examining this. I am the one who wants to see that. I'm the one who needs this or that. But it doesn't work. And because it doesn't work, we keep running into the same wall again and again and again. And it doesn't work for two main reasons. First, because logical reasoning is limited to its own structure. It's a structure, useful. But because it's a structure, it's limited by nature. And our true nature is limitless. Everyone's light is limitless. And so that's one. The second, because it is the mind that is trying to figure out itself, or the eye trying to see itself. Totally futile. Impossible. So to see it, we have to create a person who is seeing. So when we create the person who is seeing, we also create what we're seeing. It all falls apart. Actually, while it's falling apart, it's agonizing too, because it doesn't work. And so instead of trying to figure out who we are, we can go directly to the way our true nature shines through every simple expression, as the Tenge was trying to say, both Hakuin and Tenge. To go directly to things as they are, like the eyes blinking and the mouth chewing food, the wind blowing through the trees, the waves in the ocean, the quietude up on a mountain trail, or the loudness of a city in the middle of the day. Everything is always expressing our true nature. Everything and everyone, as Yunmen says. Now we can add to that, even the annoying drivers on the road. That's not lacking. The light is being expressed, maybe not used well, but being expressed. Am I using it well, is the question. Or do I want to complain about somebody who's not using their true light well? So the realization that everyone emits the same great light has multiple implications. It frees us. It can free us from the bondage of the egoic self-concernedness. It teaches us unconditional acceptance, because everyone has light, same light. And it crumbles the wall that separates us from others, dissolving the hardened self. And that leads to humility as a natural way of being. Not the manufactured kind of humility, or the thought of kind. However, the expansion from our 3-foot world of self-concernedness to a recognition of vast and unified reality is a radical shift for us, since it defies our logical thought structure, and it messes with our sense of comfort and security. Our culture, upbringing, and education do not teach us to see reality in such a way. So there's a natural resistance to expand and include everyone. There's actually natural resistance to sitting. I recently gave an introduction session, and somebody was there said, we opened it up to a discussion afterwards, and this person was saying, I said I was trying to convince myself that it is good for me. Right? I was trying while sitting. I was restless and I didn't want to be here. But I was trying to convince myself that it's good for me. Right? So this is, it's kind of like pressing the gas for the car to go and then the brake at the same time. That's what it feels like. Right? I want to let go, but I don't want to let go. Or convince me that it will help me, so I let go. If I convince you that it's going to help you, I help you fortify what this is trying to dissolve. So the answer was, it's not good for you. It's terrible for you. Zazen will kill you. Right? Do you agree? Are you dead? Right, exactly. Dies hard, you're saying. That's very true. Again and again and again. It'll kill you. And then you will come to life again. And it'll kill you again. Until at some point, said, the hell with you, I'll just stay dead. Then you come to life. So I did not convince this person that it's good for them. And they did not come back. So Yunmen said, everyone has a light, and then he follows with a question to all of us. What is your light? What is it? How would you answer this question? What is your light? You hear such a question. Obviously, we want to get in touch with that. Everyone has a light. Well, my life is dark, and I would like to get in touch with that. What is it? Nobody answered. Everybody was quiet. This often happens with Yunmen's short teachings. He would get up, he would ask a question, nobody said anything, then he would answer on their behalf. So in this case, he said, on their behalf, the kitchen pantry and the main gate. Kitchen pantry and the main gate. Now, do you want to see the light Yunmen is talking about, right? Look no further. This lectern, this cushion, this window, the bowls we just ate with in jihatsu, the chopsticks we used, the rag we used for samu, all of it, the water to wash the dishes. Everyone, everywhere has light. Now we tend to divide our lives to long periods of mundane activity that we may find repetitive or uninteresting, and then short periods of high points and exciting experience that we may find to be more stimulating or rare. So that idea of light usually goes along with that. It has to do with me feeling a certain way, or it has to do with me being stimulated in a certain way. And while doing that, we reject so much on the way, moment by moment, what we call mundane activities. So take, for example, the solar eclipse, right? Now, this is considered a rare occurrence that we may not want to miss, right? You may not be able to see it again for the rest of your life, they said. So people got in their cars and traveled hundreds of miles or thousands of miles. People came from Europe to see that, right? To see the eclipse. Close your eyes. There you go. Eclipse. Over. You want to add the coolness? Go in the cold shower. Then you close your eyes in the cold shower, you get the same experience. How can you say that? It's an incredible thing. What about this? Not incredible? It's not rare enough, right? It's not rare enough. Now, if you have kids that have grown up and they left the house, you look back at the moments you spend with them. They did not feel rare back then, but when you look back now, it was rare. You know, we define things based on some ideas of what is considered interesting or exciting, and we do what we do to go and be exposed to that. But what about everything else? We have to ask. What about getting up in the morning, opening your eyes, getting out of bed? What about putting your foot on the ground? What about making a cup of coffee? Feeding the cat? All that stuff that we just squander. Probably the best word to use, right? We use that word, so squander. So we travel hundreds of miles to see an eclipse. And what about in between where we were and then until the moment we got to the eclipse that lasted 2 minutes? And then we write about it and we talk about it. And why? Because people say this is important, this is rare. Every second is rare because everyone has light. And it's the same light here, 1,000 miles from here, before the eclipse, during the eclipse, after the eclipse, washing the dishes when you're done eating. So this is what we chanted, right? This Dhamma, incomparably profound and minutely subtle. That's what this is about. It's rarely met with, even in millions of ages. Rarely met with. Now we see this. Now we hear this. Now receive and maintain this. What do we think this is about? Profound and rare, yet eyebrows lie horizontally, the nose vertically. And this is from Dogen, actually, when Dogen came back, he went to from Japan to China to dive deeply into Zen study. And he became a successor. He came back to Japan and they asked him, what have you learned in China? That's what he said. The eyes are horizontal, the nose is vertical. That's the rarity I realized. So if we go to see an eclipse, when we come back and we don't realize that, we realize nothing. If we go and we come back realizing, I didn't have to go anywhere because it's here, then it was worth it. Now, it is rare not because it isn't prevalent everywhere. It is rarely met with because most of the time our attention is absorbed in thoughts and the thinking mind distorts reality by judging, categorizing, and labeling everything. So the degree of our openness and presence is often determined by the definition and value our mind assigns to the experience we're having. If it is considered special, I will pay attention. If the world says it's special, I will pay attention. Or if I think that this person is important, or if other people tell me this person is important for your career, oh yeah, I'll pay attention. What am I getting out of it, right? And it's so sad that we reduce this precious reality to three tiny boxes of like, dislike, or indifferent. It's a shame that we reduce our own great capacity to a tiny existence of a defined self and view reality through a pinhole. We are so much greater than that. So much greater. And so to help us break through this tiny bubble, Yunmen ends this short monologue by throwing in a radical statement. A good thing isn't as good as nothing. A good thing isn't as good as nothing. And this is an invitation to a liberated life. Now, defining something as good or bad is usually determined by personal preferences, habits, societal norms, which create the illusion of absoluteness and solidifies the structure of our personal cage, holding us back. Whatever we hold on to becomes our trap and shackles. So by saying that nothing surpasses something good, Yunmen suggests we recognize the nothingness within the somethingness, or the nothingness that is always, always available to us. Or the unknown within the known, emptiness within the form, which is another one to say, another way to say, or to recognize everyone's light as your own light. Or see yourself in everything. See the preciousness of yourself or your own being in everything. So on that line, Hakuin commented, saying, "These words are very poisonous, fatal even in the air. A good thing cannot match nothing. How terrifying! Even to speak of becoming a Buddhist or joining a Sangha is being a busybody. Trying to sweep away everything is a misunderstanding. He shaves steel from the tip of a needle." Now, this is talking about the level of refinement that is required to actually experience what he's talking about. This level of to shave steel from a tip of a needle. Now, how can we do that if we are restless, if our attention is everywhere, if we're not concentrated, right? If we're not practicing going deeper and deeper and deeper, we never get there because we're always on top. And then we go and we consume all kinds of fascinating experiences. It's never enough. But it feeds something. It feeds the restlessness. And Tenkei commenting on that as well, saying, "All of space in the 10 directions, the entire cosmos is your own light. All space in the 10 directions, the entire cosmos is your own light. Then, of course, a good thing is not as good as nothing. The rising and vanishing is not as good as eternity. And what is eternity? Or how do you get in touch with eternity? You go to the rising and vanishing. You go to what you reject. And then you will see what they're talking about." And he says, these words, as Hakuin said, these words are poisonous. They are designed to kill you, or it may sound better to say that they are designed to revive you. The same as Dogen saying, "To forget the self is to be verified by all things, to see yourself in everything." But before we get there, before we see ourselves in everything, we need to drop the separating barrier created by the outline of me. Or in other words, I need to drop me to see you. If I don't drop me, I am not able to see you. No, I'll say it differently. If I don't drop me, I'm not able to love you. Only by dropping me, I can actually love you. I am the barrier. I, as who I think I am, is the barrier that prevents love from propagating. Chew on that for a while. So how do we use it, right? So this is what it is. How do we use it? This is a short story. Zen master Mayu was fanning himself. A monk approached and said, "Master, the nature of wind is permanent and there is no place it does not reach," right? Like the light. "Why do you then fan yourself? Why do you do it? It's everywhere." Now he said, "Although you understand that the nature of wind is permanent," Mayu replied, "you do not understand the meaning of its reaching everywhere. You do not understand how to actualize it. You're still creating a gap." And so the monk asked him, "What is the meaning of its reaching everywhere?" Mayu just kept fanning himself. The monk bowed deeply. So everyone has light. Has a light, or their light, or you are the light, right? Atadipa, we chant. So there is all that. We may understand that, or we may get something in that. But the question is, how do we bring that light into every second of our lives, every interaction? How do we? And the answer to that has everything to do with knowing how to stay still and silent. Especially when we don't want to stay still and silent. Those are the most important moments to do it. because it's an incredible opportunity. Every time we feel irritated, it's an incredible opportunity to actually be kind and loving. Because if we do it, we start to go in a different direction. Right? And then we don't use it as an excuse to not be kind and loving. When we do use it as excuse to not be kind and loving, we fortify the barrier. The verse says, spontaneously shining, ranged in a solitary light. So beyond our preferences, that means the great light shines through every experience in our lives, never lacking or discriminating through everything. He opens up a route for you. Flowers fall, the tree has no shadow. Flowers fall, the tree has no shadow. When all the extras, all the stuff that I consider to be the building blocks of me, when all of that falls away, the tree has no shadow. I have nothing to hold on to. There's no, when you walk, you don't leave anything behind. There's no trace. You just walk. You just function freely. Nothing dangling, nothing attached, nothing connected. And you're free to change. So when flowers fall, the tree has no shadow. When looking, who doesn't see? Seeing or not seeing? Riding backwards on an ox, entering the Buddha shrine. Now, riding backwards, when we tame our mind, when we tame our mind, we can function in this mad world without being attached to it or held back by the conventional reality. Define convention while living within convention. So on the verse, Hakuin commented by saying, one who has reached the realm of seeing without views is independent and free. The one who has reached the realm of seeing without views is independent and free. Seeing without views. That's true seeing. Seeing with views cannot be true seeing. It is distorted from the get-go. So I am not actually seeing. I'm seeing with me asking, what do I get out of this? Is it good for me? Is it not? Do they like me? They don't like me? Right? So we bring everything that we carried up to this moment, that we accumulated, and we dump it on life, and then we try to see. Very difficult to see anything like that. So to actually see without views. And that means to go directly, to bypass the restless mind, the nervous mind, and go directly to reality. So two things happen. Seeing becomes available, and the barrier dissolves at once. And Tenkei said, when you look, light is light, dark is dark. No one cannot see that. Light and darkness are fundamentally one's own light pervading the universe. Do you see or don't you see? This is what is referred to as the time of light and dark in pairs, where both seeing and not seeing are swept away. Seeing and not seeing are swept away. So I'll finish with the pointer, going back to the pointer where we started. He holds the world fast without the slightest leak. He cuts off the mirrored flows without keeping a drop. Open your mouth and you're wrong. Hesitate in thought and you miss. Now, open your mouth and you're wrong is because as soon as you do that, if without examination, without knowing how to be still, we open our mouth and already start to go in a different direction, already separate. That's the wrong. The wrong as in the word sin, to miss the point, to miss the mark. That's why it says after that, hesitate in thought and you miss. We go to thought, we separate. We step away from thought, we unite. And then it ends by asking, tell me, what is the barrier penetrating eye? What is the barrier penetrating eye? And what is the Buddha eye? Right? Those eyes are attached to all the stuff, to all the known. So what they see will either verify or not what we think we know. So either for or against. But the Buddha eye is that great light. It doesn't see differentiation in a harmful way. It sees differentiation as different manifestations of the same great light. Beyond liking or disliking, what does it matter if I like or not? Or actually ask it, to who does it matter if I like or not? So work with that. Or work just with examining what is preventing you personally from unconditional love and acceptance. Just work with that. Thank you, and I deeply appreciate you being here or there. And love you all. Thank you.